and welcome to episode 62 of the SDG podcast, where we speak about science, technology, gaming, and other stuff. And today I have a discussion with Jan Prax, and we are going to discuss satellites, space in general, space technology, and yeah, the discussion goes a bit around, but it was really interesting, and I hope it will be also as interesting to listen that it was to actually discuss. Enjoy.
First of all, I don't know very much about you, so why don't you introduce yourself? But you do that much better than me.
All right. So, happy to be here. Thanks for the invitation. My name is Jan Prax. I'm teaching space technology and remote sensing at Aalto University. I'm currently an assistant professor and also the leader of the small satellite group at School of Electrical Engineering. So I'm also the leader of Aalto 1 project, Aalto 2 project, Aalto 3 project, and now we are building for sale missions and some other missions like Quark and Saturn. So a lot of small satellites, a lot of space stuff. So yeah, that's me.
All right. So then we were speaking before of trying to keep the discussion more on the what is new in the space technology, what it's done in these years. We just not go into the big missions because that's not your focus, and well, someone else should talk about those. And what you're doing is this small satellite. So we had already an episode before speaking about this small satellite made in Aalto, but then why don't you discuss about so what type of satellite you are building and what are the application of those satellites like this and which one are actually in space or not?
Yeah, let's give a small background. So the whole space area, a space technology area, is having a slow revolution at the moment, and everything is changing. And the name of the game is miniaturization, because access to space is very expensive. And if you go with a big satellite, you have to have a big satellite in order to do some things. And if the size of your technology is a certain size, you have to like put a satellite, which is a size of a car, to space with a big rocket. Now, what has happened is we have now very small technology, and mostly mobile phones and then this kind of wearable technology has been leading the development. We have very small technology now, and we found out that we can put this also to space. We can build a satellite which is not anymore 1,000 kilograms or 500 kilograms or 8,000 kilograms than some of the satellites are. We can build a satellite which is 4 kilograms, and it's doing almost the same thing. And the cost of putting this satellite to the orbit is a fraction of previous costs. And of course, money is driving the world, so that means like if we have a possibility to put like fraction of the cost to the project and have a space project from this money, then a lot of universities, institutes, small countries, they start to do space missions, and all this activity is nowadays called like a new space. Because this also gives you an opportunity to a new type of economy. Previously, making a satellite was so expensive, like typically hundreds of millions, sometimes several billions. And if you have this kind of satellite, it's very limited, let's say, opportunity to earn this money back with an economy. Yeah. Nowadays, if you have a very small satellite, you can earn this money back much faster, and it brings a lot of new ideas and a lot of new stuff what is happening in the space field.
It could be also like much more commercially viable compared to before.
Exactly.
That maybe a telecommunication satellite, fine, they know what they are selling.
Exactly.
But science satellites, it's kind science of hard to sell somehow.
Yeah, but science as well. So for the same amount of money, we can do a lot more small science. And we are actually doing also science missions. But coming back to the history now, when Aalto University and we entered the game. So back in 2009, I was getting a responsibility to lead one of the space technology courses called Space Systems or something like this. And we didn't have much like space technology people in the lab at that time. So we brought different outside lecturers to the course, and we had a nice course. And in the beginning of 2010, I had a nice colleague from Delft University, Antti Kestilä. He was a PhD student, and we started with our enthusiastic students. We started a group work or a special assignment just to do something like challenging and nice in a space technology area. And we figured out pretty fast that what we want to do is a satellite. Okay. Because Finland didn't have a satellite before.
So, up to until 2010, there was no basically there was space no industry. Satellite.
Yeah, there was small amount of okay. space industry because
maybe collaboration with.
Because European Space Agency is Finnish space agency, and Finland was joining European Space Agency in 95.
Okay, so there was collaboration with other, but yeah, not
so
anything.
Finland has been building a lot of instruments to different science missions, but never its own satellite. Yeah. So our satellite project 2010 was the first one, and it took actually 7 years and a lot of like effort and money throughout the years, also from me, to bring this project to the actual launch. And now Aalto-1 satellite, which was called back then 2010 Aalto-1, and Aalto was backing this project and starting to give some funds for it. We launched it 2017. It's now in space, still operating. The longest living Finnish satellite, 2.5 years, doing science measurements in space at the moment. So it was a success story.
So what kind of sensor do you have?
Yes, Aalto-1 satellite is a 4 kilogram satellite. And it's actually a multifunctional, pretty complicated satellite. So we were totally crazy in the beginning, starting with okay. such
a... When you start something new.
we wanted to have it all. So the satellite has three payloads. It has a very miniature spectral imager, which is, let's say, 10 times smaller than anything before for spectral imaging from space. And this is developed by VTT Finland.
Okay. So this is specifically made for this satellite?
Exactly. They had an instrument which was developed for small helicopters okay. and UAVs. And we just went to these guys and said, like, why don't you have this instrument, a small spectral imager for satellites? I said, yeah, might be actually an idea.
Yeah, of course, and if it's missing the satellite, you don't build the instrument also. So
exactly.
That's the point of the new technology.
Yeah, and then we found another payload, which was coming from University of Turku. We found another consortium, which was actually back then, already 2009 and 8, discussing about creating the first Finnish satellite. And they had an idea to create a radiation measurement instrument because these were radiation scientists there in Turku. So they brought on board of this satellite a radiation instrument. And then Finnish Meteorological Institute was already building an ESAIL system for Estonian satellite, which I was also involved.
Okay.
So we also called these guys and said, like, what do you want to come to our satellite? So they all wanted to come, and we had like three payloads on the satellite, and this made also the satellite project very long and challenging, because you have to put like all these different requirements to the same small 4 kilogram box, provide the power for everything, attitude for everything, and so on. So it was quite a challenging project, but we pulled it off.
And so now you can make measurements. What type of measurement are you actually making with this?
Yeah, so of course not everything sort of worked out as well as we wanted, but we were able and still able to image hyperspectrally with this camera. Unfortunately, the attitude system of the satellite, which we was one of the few systems which we bought commercially,
okay.
because we were not sure that we can develop it.
So everything else is made.
Also, the batteries are from a company.
Okay. But that makes sense. Yeah, developing your own
batteries. Exactly. But we actually all the rest mostly is developed by our students or our collaborators, and the attitude system didn't work properly.
Okay.
So we can unspin the satellite so that it's almost stable. We can take pictures. The most sort of successful instrument has been the radiation instrument from Turku. So they have been making almost 2 years of different kind of measurements, and we have been publishing several papers on this. Also, the first spectral imager images were delivered by Aalto satellite, but there is already our spin-off company, Reactor Space Lab, who built with very similar sensor a next mission called Hello World, and they have been delivering already many, many images on the hyperspectral range. We have only taken few images, and let's say around 50, 70 optical images.
Okay, altogether. Of course, the first opens the way.
Yes, yes.
You're not there to be
yes,
the best.
Exactly. Yeah. And we struggled a lot to create the ground station, to write the ground station operation software, to have people to operate the satellite. And it's a long road with a lot of small steps.
So the other interesting thing for me is that knowing a student that was working there is that it's made by the students.
Yes.
So you have people that come there, they know, let's say, nothing. Or
yes,
limited amount of some in certain area, and then they have to learn all the technology, apply it, make something new, and then they leave, and then someone else comes. So it's a challenge by itself to develop
exactly
in a university environment.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun, and it was a mess, of course, as well. But this kind of very challenging project, they attract very, very highly skilled and motivated students. So I think we got the best students in Aalto University. And some of these students are also created companies like ICEYE, which is one of the most successful space companies in Finland nowadays.
Yeah, it
actually
gives you
the biggest one.
Really good knowledge.
Exactly. And I mean, nobody knew how to build a satellite. We were all learning, like teachers and students alike. And also, we had a lot of people who were not able to do much. There were a lot of people who found some skill of electronics or programming or something which we were able to do. And some people learned small things like how to do the solar panels or how to glue the solar panels and solar cells to the panel and so on. A lot of small things. And that's why it took so many years, like 6 years. To get the satellite together.
It's really funny when you're like, come on, satellites, they have been there since the 50s. What's hard in that? But first of all, of course, you want to learn by yourself.
Yes.
So that takes time. Otherwise, you just buy a satellite. But that's not the point of making your own project.
Exactly.
And also, it's always this kind of thing that you're making something that maybe has been done before, but it's done in a different way. So then you want to use new materials even, and just, that you said, just gluing a panel.
Yeah.
It's not just gluing a piece of paper together.
Exactly.
It might be really difficult because in space you have different condition. And so that also, how do you test these things here?
Yes. So we, over the years, now we have been building a very capable testing environment. Now we have almost all the equipment what is needed for testing. Back then we had a bit less, but testing is one of the most, let's say, crucial areas of space technology. So otherwise, it's just the technology. But because you cannot test it in space, you have to create on the ground a bit similar conditions. And typically, you create these conditions like one of the time. So first, you create vacuum, then you create like low temperatures, then you create vibrations, but sometimes not at the same time. And that means like you have to do many, many tests and find out, does it still work? We built a lot of test rigs and we found a lot of companies and laboratories all around the campus and Finland to use for testing. So we were going from place to place and testing things.
So what about do you ever test, or is it even possible to do some low gravity testing, or is it even needed?
Sorry. No, it's not really needed for this kind of small CubeSat or satellite. And drop towers are used. So
okay,
you have long tower to drop the stuff from there to have like a couple of seconds of zero gravity. If they are like really advanced, you might have a vacuum inside there and so on. But mostly for satellites, zero gravity is not really needed. Although not having zero gravity makes the testing of attitude system very, very challenging. And this was one of the problems with Aalto-1, that we didn't have enough advanced equipment for testing, and that's why we didn't found out that it will not work in space properly before the launch.
But also that's something that at this point, this is a test, because yes, when it's in space, then you're testing it.
Exactly.
Before you're just
hoping
to. And then, so then you have now several Aalto number satellites going on.
Yes, yes.
So are they still, how many are there?
At the moment, we are working with a student. Let's say we have now separated a bit student projects and more professional projects. And the student group is working with a satellite called Aalto 3. And we just were a couple of weeks ago, almost a month ago, we were at ESTEC in European Space Agency, applying for a program called Fly Your Satellite. And we were selecting as one of the finalists, but let's see, it should come the information about are we going forward with this program or not. But students have been creating entire satellite design, again, mostly from scratch, using some of the previous knowledge. And this satellite has a payload, which is developed now in Aalto. Our students have been making a low frequency, a very interesting software-defined radio. So you can do different kind of waveforms and communication with the satellite in UHF range. Then this is the student project. So student project is open. Students can come from different areas, participate in the project. And we try to have a small satellite launched, let's say, this year or next year.
So do you have also like master theses?
Yes.
Are there any PhDs done in there?
Yes, there are many PhDs and PhD students, but PhD students, they're mostly just advising the student satellite project. And the PhD students are working with our science satellites. We are working in a program called ForSail. It's the Finnish Center of Excellence in Research of Sustainable Space. We have a consortium with Helsinki University, University of Turku, Finnish Meteorological Institute, and Aalto University. And we built actually several ForSail satellites in this area. Our biggest challenge in this program is to go with a very small satellite, a CubeSat, to the high orbit where the radiation level is like 10 times, 100 times higher than in a low Earth orbit. And having normal electronics components needs a lot of creative solutions in order to make this satellite last at least half a year.
Yeah, so you are not, of course, now when you develop a semiconductor, any type of sensor or circuits, whatever, when you do it here, it's easy because we know the everything, the radiation and the environment. But when you go to space, then you either take the technology, you completely change it and make it for space. And I guess when you have millions, 100 or 1 million, then you can just make your electronics made to be in space. It's just everything, materials are different.
Yes.
But then for your case.
Yes. What we want to do is sort of play according to the rules of this new space and make these small satellites affordable.
Yeah.
We are using automotive components. We use different kind of redundancy solutions in order to use these components in a satellite and still last. Of course, you can buy components which are developed for big satellites, but they are very, very expensive.
Yeah.
So one of the processors you need to have might be like 10,000 euros. And this is so high price that a small satellite advantage would disappear.
So just a small point here on the costs. How much is the cost of all this, like general cost of a small satellite can be?
Yeah, it can be sort of, let's say, a smallest 1U CubeSat can be bought commercially for 40,000-50,000 euros.
All right.
It's already a working
satellite.
And that
is a small, like 10 by 10 centimeters.
Yes, it's a 10 by 10 centimeters, 1 kilogram satellite.
Okay, with everything you need.
Yes.
Okay.
Developing entire Aalto-1 satellite over 6 years took more than 1 million.
Without counting that you don't pay the student.
Even without counting this, taking into account that we had also different institutes, VTT working with their own budget.
Turbo. Yeah, it's just an indication of the cost, of course.
And The launch of Aldo 1 satellite was 240,000 euros.
So it's almost one quarter of the price.
It's one quarter of the price already. And so it's sort of like developing this thing is sort of expensive. But of course, you have to take into account that you teach these people, they going to get educated, you are developing their whole like laboratories and the capability of building satellites.
There is the schooling also component.
Yes.
So then maybe a more commercial satellite developed with more standardized procedure,
it depends very much on what kind of satellite you cost. If you have a very accurate attitude system, it might be like several hundreds of thousands, the similar small satellite. And if you don't have very challenging attitude system, only with magnets or electromagnets, might be like only a couple of tens of thousands. So there is a wide variety.
Yeah, let's say that one person cannot buy, but even a small company can do it themselves in a university, no problem.
Exactly.
So it's changing quite a lot.
It is changing, yes. And the price is driving the development. So usually these kind of innovations will start to change the world when they are like cheap enough.
Yeah.
For example, if you have a mobile phone and it's still like one like prototype mobile phone can be also several millions to be developed, you cannot do much with it. But if it's 200 euros or 100 euros and everybody has it, then the world starts to change. And the same thing happens now with the satellites. And we have so many small satellites, we can do so much more with these satellites, and they are coming to the market and they're starting to provide services, and this will change the world.
Also new ideas, because when you have this big 10, 20 years project that they build this huge satellite, they want to go into a comet and land there. This is a huge project with people that have their career in there. The ideas are limited. Like that's what we are doing. We started now, and in 20 years we finish.
Yes.
What changed in these 20 years?
Yes, and this is also why we need it, and we still need for very challenging things. We need these space agencies like European Space Agency or NASA or JAXA, because it's no reason to do this alone. But now the small satellites, I mentioned the fossil satellites here before, are giving opportunity also to small countries to start with their own science programs. And fossil satellites are the first satellites of Finnish science satellites. They are developed in Finland, the instruments are developed in Finland, and also our science ideas and the measurements are developed in Finland. So that means smaller countries can have their own space programs, science programs, and it's a lot of small, a bit more risky maybe, but innovative science, which can be made with a very small satellites. And for example, also to having like a lot of measurements. Let's have a big model. So you have a model of space weather or whatever. And in order to validate these kind of models, you actually need a lot of measurement points. And if you make one very expensive satellite, you still get one point of measurement. But with these very small satellites, you can create a constellation or swarm of satellites, and you can have a lot of measurements. And this actually brings a new quality level for your measurements. You can start to validate phenomena which are like showing up in your model, but you had never before an opportunity to actually see in your measurements because you just had too few measurements. Now it's possible.
Yeah. Also, I mean, this is probably a discussion that comes out all the time, but then it's already a problem with, let's say, old-style big satellite kind of a situation, but now a lot of small satellites, they stay in space. What do you do?
Yeah, this is bringing us to space debris problem.
Yeah, that's...
This is a very important problem, and I'm so happy that Finland has been actually... We have been thinking about these problems from the beginning. That's why in Aalto 1 satellite, we had an instrument, and we still have the instrument called Plasma Break, which was designed to bring down the satellite from orbit with a sort of passive propulsion system. It has a long line or tether, which is charged with a with an electrostatic field. You just put the voltage to the tether and you will have an electric field around this tether and it will break the satellite. And will, if the speed is getting smaller, the satellite is coming down, hits the atmosphere, burns to the ashes, and it's just like a small star flash in the sky and you get rid of your satellite. The problem with satellites is that if they are all in a similar altitude and they are going like with a huge speed, the speed is like 27,000 kilometers per hour, and if they happen to collide, it's a lot of small bullets in orbit. And then these bullets go and kill other satellites, and this effect called Kessler syndrome, and if it happens, it might render some of the altitudes totally useless.
Yeah, so there is this, the Gravity movie, that it's not a good movie, but it kind of shows
it's a sort of nice movie. It's
like visually a nice movie. Then there is some
problem. It's not so wrong. Of course, it has a lot of problems as well. But
it shows what it could
happen
in...
Exactly. And this is, by the way, one of the reasons why International Space Station is at so low orbit. So it's only 400 kilometers.
It's avoiding
satellites. Because it's... avoiding the space debris, because atmospheric drag on this altitude is already so big that every smaller object will come down in like a couple of months anyhow.
Okay, so the space station is big enough that it can collect the orbit.
And they have to speed up the space station every now and then. So that means if you go with a rocket or something and then you have to push more speed to the space station, it goes a bit higher and then starts to come down again. Because if you go, for example, to 600 kilometers with a space station, then there is already a significant amount of small bullet type of space debris, which is just going and puncturing your space habitat. Yeah. And this is not nice.
No, for sure not. For the people inside, and then consider that that is the most expensive thing ever built.
Exactly.
You don't want it to be.
Unfortunately, we, at the moment in the world, we are not like very good in collaboration, space is global, and space really needs a global approach to the, let's say, global space flight control. We need to share the frequencies, and especially the orbits, somehow in a fair way. And we have to watch out that satellites are not colliding. We need to put the regulations on that satellites have an engine or something which can bring them down. Otherwise, we are putting so much stuff to space that the space might be unuseful for future generations for hundreds of years.
Yeah, what we are doing in here with the trash, we are doing the same space. So nothing
is being... that is true. Yeah. And it's a technical problem.
Yeah. Well, also it's a kind of a wheel problem in the sense that there is kind of maybe, now since I'm not in the field, but it feels always that there is this kind of a Cold War competition kind of a approach sometimes in space. Like we want to be the first because we are best than the others and we cannot do it together. And that's why, of course, the European Union with the Union of the States is kind of showing, hey, we don't need to be one against the other. Just it's space. Everybody's winning. It's not me against you anymore. So also connected to this, like, who is actually now monitoring this? Is there some separate entities that...
Yes, so there is no there is, let's say, United States has the only organization who has at the moment enough capacity to track and keep track of every a bit bigger space object in space. So there is a map, or let's say a model, of all the space debris particles, like hundreds of thousands particles. We know where they go and what is their orbit. Several countries, including Europe, they are building the capacity for this. This area is called space situational awareness. So they building the capacities. It means radars, it needs lasers, and a lot of modeling capacity to keep track where all these bits and pieces are.
But of course, the smallest one, then, like how small can you go? Yes. That's always
a
problem.
You can go surprisingly small. For a low Earth orbit, which is like 500 to 700 kilometers, we can track with lasers and radars pieces like as small as 1 cubic centimeter.
Ah, okay. So that's really small.
Yeah, that's really small. But there are still For example, a flick of paint can kill a satellite.
Yeah, it feels weird. It's like,
yes.
Oh, this is so small, but it goes so fast.
It goes so fast that
kinetic energy is not stupid.
Exactly. This is what happens. And different countries are starting to make agreements also how to use higher orbits. And now, especially with a lowering cost of single satellite, we can see things emerging like OneWeb or Elon Musk building a communication satellite constellation where he promised to have more than 10,000 satellites. If you put all these 10,000 satellites to 1,200 kilometers where approximately he wants to put them, it's a so huge amount that there's a high risk for collision. So we will really need to think how to bring them down when they are not working, how to avoid the collisions, and how to clean up if collision happens, and so on.
Also, there is at some point a problem when who is deciding these things? Like, I am a company, I want to put X amount of satellites, and I do it just because I can do it.
Yes.
And there maybe starts to be a need of a regulation of the, like, you cannot just do whatever you want and just put satellites
not,
there.
It's not totally unregulated area. There is a United Nations has issued something which is called Space Treaty. And the Space Treaty started with the United States and Soviet Union back in the time. And now many, many countries have been joining this treaty and they have space legislation. And Finland, by the way, because of all the one satellite, also was sort of motivated to make a space law. So from the beginning of 2018, last year, no, 2 years ago, space law was finally accepted in Finnish parliament, and Finland has a space law now.
So there is some agreement between countries.
Yes, yeah, there are sort of agreements.
Again, every country, it has to evolve the law in that sense. And I mean, this is very positive also because, again, you need the first. Otherwise, why do you need space law if you don't have anything in space?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that, of course, for you, it's like, of course, it's everyday life. But that's not something that most of the people would know.
That's true, yes. Astronauts are a very popular topic, and people know typically what an astronaut is.
Yeah.
But often it's a sort of invisible what's happening in space or how many actual services we are having from space. For example, nowadays, navigation systems are so critical that, for example, if we just shut down all the GPS satellites, we cannot do banking or transactions anymore.
Yeah.
And people don't know that.
Yeah, the world is really needed this.
Exactly. It's a backbone of infrastructure which is located in space. And we as a like society, we as a humankind, the civilization needs it. And this is also an area for competition because many countries or like European Union, for example, are building independent navigation satellite systems.
Yeah.
United States has a GPS. China has Beidou. Russia has GLONASS. European Union has Galileo system. So this is because we want to be sure that if something happens to GPS system, which is a military system, by the way.
So then Galileo is not a military system.
Yeah,
so that's already quite a big difference in the use case.
However, there is still like these kind of things are sort of always a bit dual use. But Galileo system is built for civil use. Yes.
Exactly. Of course, the military is going to use it, but it's not just the military says, okay, now we need it, that's it.
Yes.
So it's, and it's not only like if something happens between countries, but if something happens in general.
Exactly.
It's good to have
backup. Like, yes.
Yeah. And I mean, mobile phone nowadays, you can launch some up and check.
Yeah.
And they use all the three systems and whatever is better, they use it at the moment.
Actually, India is already building their own navigation system as well.
And again, this is going to go back to the problem of too much stuff in space, maybe at some point.
Exactly, you name it.
Okay, maybe they are like more far away and...
Yes, navigation satellites are pretty high. So they are an orbit area which is called mid-Earth orbit. And this is typically like 18 to 25,000 kilometers high. So they are very, very high. They are in a very bad environment related to the radiation there. But they are so high that the actual risk for collision is very, very low. So the biggest space debris problem, fastest building up problem is low Earth orbit between 500 and 800 kilometers, where we have all the remote sensing satellites and starting to have low Earth orbit communication satellites. And another very busy area is geostationary orbit, because most of the television satellites, like SAT-TV satellites and communication satellites, are in this area. And this is the biggest commercial activity area, actually, these like television satellites.
Okay, so are those really still used a lot? Like,
yes,
nowadays,
yes, surprisingly.
Fears that is everything through yes. cable and we don't need satellite. But
yes, here in northern countries and Europe, we are driving away from the satellite TV. That is true. But more and more we use satellite communication.
Okay.
And if you go to the, let's say, a bit poorer countries, Asia and different areas, if you look at the a photo of a city, you can see a satellite TV antenna almost on every balcony.
All right, yeah.
So it's a huge market.
I mean, there was, like, at least in Italy, maybe 15 years ago,
yes.
big time
yes.
satellite TV. Nowadays, I think it's going to, like, this digital everything
exactly.
on Earth with
yeah.
the radio signals.
Same so happens in Finland, yeah. totally. So we have been, like, getting mostly rid of the SAT-TV, it's not the thing anymore. But there are many countries where it is still very, very popular and one of the areas.
And that's so we were discussing before, just to change maybe the topic a little bit and go more on the space in general. Like you were saying that Mars mission and this kind of bigger mission might be not be done or could not be done in the way that we are thinking. So what do you think about that? Like, just should we go to Mars, not go to Mars? And the other thing is, like, is it really counting if we don't send humans there?
Yes,
because we've sent already robots on Mars, so that's
yes.
do we say done, we got to Mars?
No, we definitely will go to Mars. This
okay.
is, I don't think there is no question about going to Mars. Yes, we will go to Mars. Well, will happen at some point. Is it reasonable? I do not know exactly. And I was often I'm using on comparison with let's say end of 19th century and the beginning of 20th century. A lot of expeditions went to North Pole and South Pole. There was a race
yeah.
to go to conquer these areas. But how many people we have living there nowadays? There's like seven guys living in a South Pole through the winter in a very isolated
they
place.
They try to be in the
and
coast
this is,
that area.
Exactly. And this is an easy environment. You have atmosphere, you have normal pressure, you have normal gravity,
yeah.
you don't have radiation problems, everything
is the
same. You
can speak with people much easier, yeah.
Yes, you can have phone,
yeah.
and you can, like, fly with an airplane or helicopter in few hours, you can get people back from there or whatever.
Yeah.
And Mars is a hostile environment. So I believe that we go to the Mars, we try it out. There is an exploration gene in humankind, and we want to do it. But how reasonable is to live there, like, forever underground because of radiation, without the pressure of the atmosphere, with a totally wrong, or not totally wrong, but wrong gravity constant for your body? I don't think it's a nice experience. And I think the only way for us as humans is to take good care of Earth. I'm also thinking it's a sort of dangerous to think that, okay, we will just consume this planet and go to the next
yeah.
one. It's not going to happen. We are so well adapted and so highly developed species for this planet that we don't have chances on the other planets.
So maybe it's, okay, of course we're speaking maybe in the lower term, because let's say 500 years in the future, I mean, everything will be so different that if you take 500 years before.
But the gravity constant, like, the gravity constant on Mars is still different.
Is not going to change.
It's not going to change. So that's why I believe that, yes, we're going to live in space. We're going to have bigger space habitats. And we might have also space hotels when we spin and generate gravity field what we need and so on. But other planets for permanent living, at least it's not going to be any nice experience. And I don't think we're going to have huge amount of people there.
So would it be also what is the use to be?
Yes.
Because if there are used to be, like in the moon, there might be some this helium reserves and something that can be like all this big talk of let's go and mine the moon, like it's an easy thing.
Yes, yes.
But then that may be something that it takes a few days to get there. Mars, it takes half a year. So
yes, and it's also not working like this. I mean, like people are raging about like having all the titanium from asteroids on the Earth and then how much money it will actually create. It's not going to create any more money. Because, first of all, we don't necessarily need it so much anyhow. And what happened to Spain when they brought all the gold from South America? So they were ending in bankrupt. So it's not the economy is not like you are bringing all the asteroids down and then everybody get rich. No, everybody has more worthless money. Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah, also because the price of something, it depends on the amount of... So exactly. If you bring all of this, then, okay, fine. The first time you get the money and then you don't get them anymore. Of course, I mean, there's not the discussion of we should not do it. Because, I mean, it's your working space and I guess you, like everybody that works in technology, you want the new things to be done.
Yes, and asteroids are essential. If we want to build something in space, not on Earth, but in space, big habitats in space, then the only reasonable source of material is actually asteroids. It's very difficult to bring out the material from the planets because of the gravity. It makes it very expensive. But you can harness a lot of asteroids, bring the material together, use it for metal, use it for other elements. And if we're going to create habitats in space in the future as a civilization or humankind, we need to have a deposit of material. And this is the only reasonable thing is asteroids.
So we're not going to bring it. From Earth, for us at the beginning, yeah.
I mean, yes, so on Earth, probably we're going not to need it so much, but in space, this is the only source of material.
And if we end up in a situation where we need to get to an asteroid for the material we need on Earth, we kind of fuck up already so much that that's the least of the problem at that point.
I'm afraid of, yes.
Yeah, it's... If we finish a material that we need, that's things are done wrong already. And well, we are in that way going. If things are, of course, they are changing now, and well, has been said forever, but things take a lot of time to change.
Yeah, and this is actually an interesting area. I'm coming from remote sensing and Earth observation myself, so the whole management of the planet. In a way that we still can live here and it actually works, needs a lot of space. It needs a lot of space technology for monitoring and maybe even regulating at some point some of the things, like with the big mirrors, for example, reflectivity of some areas or the light conditions of some areas. So space technology is also the key for sustainable living with a big civilization on the planet.
Yeah, if we already like going as a civilization as global as possible. But of course, if you think about it, you can talk with people everywhere in the world. You can go there with a plane, but you cannot really see them. So yeah, the space is, then you go out and you see the whole planet. Also the vision of the situation is different.
Exactly.
Because when you see a certain limited amount of area,
And the perception has been changing also because of the space exploration and influential images from space exploration. But I'm so happy to see that nowadays the perception of the world is more and more for many people is a planet. It's a ball of material in space, which is sort of lonely there, and we start to understand that this is a unique place which has a unique conditions on the surface, and that's why what we can live.
Yeah, and also then this is, it changes, so like, yeah, we can find another planet somewhere beside the fact that it's way too far. And also, it's not only that we can find another planet, that's not a problem. And there are billions of planets, but this is the planet where we are evolved into. Like, exactly. As you were saying with Mars, exactly. It's extremely hard then to...
Yeah, and what are the chances if we cannot manage it here? What are the chances that we can manage it somewhere else where it's much more challenging,
yeah,
at different conditions and different, everything is sort of like hostile.
Yeah, those are like a science fiction talk that are really cool, but...
I'm all for like dreaming, and these are very useful games with like thoughts. What should be, how the society should be, and so on. But sometimes the realism also
You need to take it back.
Yeah, but really this is an interesting topic also, like the science fiction and going to other planets. It always has a social aspect. So always, if you have a story about science fiction, it also involves utopia of society which works and behaves in space, and it's different than we have here at the Earth at the moment.
Yeah, also because again the condition changes, so the society changes, and everything has to be done different. Like if you have even just a space station,
exactly,
that's the small that we have already, and where 3 to 6 people are there, they are living in a different way.
Exactly.
Because they cannot fight between each other. There is no fighting in space.
Yes.
It doesn't exist.
Yes. By the way, when Americans went to the moon, and also Russians want to go to the moon, there was also projects to invent, for example, weapons which would work on the surface of the moon. So there was like the first scenarios of going to the moon and what we should be and how we should behave were so different. It's so interesting history.
Yeah, of course, then the humans always try to find a way to fuck up things. But yeah, it's not easy, of course, to like collaborate with everybody, but at least feels to me, and speaking with people in the science and technology field, it's a different way of thinking we have, because that's, you have to, like, you don't really fight other scientists, really. You compete with them, but if you fight, then nobody gets anything. Like, if you want to send your satellite, you have to collaborate with me, that gives you the sensor, you have to collaborate with the other person that gives you the rocket, and like, it has to be a collaborative effort.
Yes, yes. And then fighting with each other is usually has been in this world like loss of resources. So we are losing a lot of people and resources, and it's not a good way to manage anything. So yeah. I totally agree.
There is this argument that it's valid on a certain way, that when you have a war type of situation, people are focusing on this one thing, that is to win the war. So, we are destroying everything. We are losing lives. People are focused. And then the argument is that then we get the best research done there, because there is this huge competition. But why do you need to focus on the war? Or do you just take the same focus and you put it somewhere else, so we don't lose resources, we don't kill people? And
yeah, and then I would gladly, let's say, I would gladly develop technology 10 years or 20 years longer in order just to have a nice and peaceful life. But this is very true. For example, the first rocket for space was developed by Germany during the Second World War, and many other things.
Yeah, radars, they were also...
Yeah, so many, many things were developing really fast during the wartime.
And yeah, of course, because the focus is so... strong, and
yes, and the resources going to the one direction only, and everybody out. And this is actually, maybe we have found a sort of way to harness this kind of not for entire society, but I've been seeing this kind of very fast development and focusing in startup companies. So I think startup companies, if they are really well motivated and they have a new idea and nice competition, they are able to work with a similar efficiency that the whole society have been like putting out in a very critical situations in the history, but they can put it to the small group and grow really fast.
Yeah, focus on the small thing that they are trying to do the best.
Exactly. And this might be much more, let's say, sustainable way of getting these small steps and efforts every now and then. ISI company, for example, they spun out the company 2015. Now it's 4 years later, they have 4 or 5 satellites in space. They are building like 6 satellites a year.
Okay.
They are launching many satellites. I mean, just few years. When they started 2012, nobody was believing that synthetic aperture radar under 100 kilograms in space would be even possible. Not even taking that this guys are like coming from bachelor and master programs,
yeah,
and they are creating this world breaking like satellites technology, but they did. And this also brings a sort of shows the beauty of this kind of startup entrepreneurship, which really makes the world spin faster.
Yeah, there is this kind of a maybe view of a startup that somehow you have to do something and you have to do it better than everybody else, otherwise you're too small and nobody cares. But then you also have this limited amount of resources. So you really need to get creative, because when you have 100 million, okay, let's take this, we throw money and we eventually brute force it and we do it. It doesn't matter if it's double the size we need, we just, you know, we can do it because we have the money. But they cannot.
Exactly. And they have to focus. They have to focus very much in order to bring this economy home and like create something new. And this is something I really like, for example, here in Aalto environment, that we have a lot of young energy and power here to create new companies, create new ideas, and the whole earth looks to spin faster here in Otaniemi than in some of the other places. So it makes me extremely happy.
Yeah, just to conclude then on this topic, like, what is the commercial application that startup are looking for? Like, what is the money to be made in space by these smaller companies? Because they have to spend a lot of money to develop satellites. In this case, we are speaking about satellites. So do they operate the satellite to provide the service, or they sell the satellites?
Of course, the ultimate goal for everybody is to provide a service which is very widely used, and preferably used by wide amount of people with a small price. So then you can take a really like big market uptake. And what they try to do mostly, at least in the beginning, is take a vertical sort of profile. That they make the satellite, they create the service, and they sell the service to the customer as a final solution. It all started with Earth observation. Because making a camera, or for example, optical camera, on board of the small satellite is maybe a easiest task. And it also brings the value very, very fast. So you can see like, wow, we have a picture of this area.
Okay.
And people start to think, yes, what else can we have? Now we have, for example, a company called Planet, which has several hundreds of these other one-sized satellites, all taking pictures from space. They are the biggest and optical...
These are just normal...
Yeah, these are just pictures. Normal optical pictures. And they are doing extremely well.
And they can
at
be
the
used
moment.
For mapping, for
yes, exactly.
All of this.
And they are also bringing these images with an unprecedented frequency. Previously, if you have one big satellite or two big satellites, you get your image of Helsinki, let's say, every 2 weeks or every 1 week.
Yeah, it depends how fast the satellite can go there. Yeah,
But it cannot go faster than the dynamic says. But with the small satellites, if you have many of them, the world has been now bringing the sort of delay time like 2 hours. And it brings like totally new application areas. Previously, you could like see how forest was growing or your crops are growing, because it's happening sort of slowly every week. Now you can go and see like what's happening in the harbor, where are the airplanes, where are the traffic jams, how many cars are parking during the Black Friday on the parking mm-hmm. lot, and so on and so on. So market analytics and different kind of risk assessments and stock markets and insurance markets and new areas kicking in, bringing new value, new markets. But also what is happening is now we're going already to the next step. So Planet was taking optical imaging market. There are a couple of more as well. Finnish ISA is taking microwave radar imaging market at the moment with a very like fast way. And now new areas are like IoT, Internet of Things. So small devices everywhere in the world, you can put pretty small satellites there to connect them all. So okay. connect the data, collect from anywhere.
So it's the same communication satellite, but in a smaller scale.
Exactly. Also communication satellites. So they are not CubeSats, this communication satellites, but only a couple of hundred kilos, maybe 500, 600 kilos, like relatively small satellites. And again, you can create entire constellations with them and have a very sort of small latency space communication. And then there are coming totally new areas like spectrum sensing. For example, we have to use radio spectrum more efficiently. And maybe we have to sense it also from space all the time. What kind of areas of electromagnetic frequencies we can use at the moment. Real-time regulations. Then there are other areas like quantum communication. We can share the quantum cryptography keys straight from space, so nobody can decrypt your communication. Navigation areas, there are first ideas how to make a very cheap and with very small satellites a navigation system which is not as accurate as the GPS or Galileo system, yeah. but still accurate enough to be useful. And new areas coming every now and then. Some of the startup companies are also promising to take your grandfather ashes to the orbit
yeah.
and bury it there. So it's like it's a lot of imagination.
Yeah, enabling new things that before
exactly.
people cannot think about.
I'm not supporting this because this is just a space debris.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just shows.
It shows the ideas.
How
yeah.
crazy people are getting with
yeah.
ideas.
And this is okay. Now to really conclude, it looks like when you take some science fiction from 50 years ago, and you always see how they depict the world now, and how they take the technology at the moment, and they make it look like it's in the future, but they would never expect that.
Yes.
A computer that fits in a phone, that's, you cannot even imagine it if until you actually get there. So now we're speaking about space is going to be this and that, and then in 50 years, they are going to check and see, they were thinking about this, oh, come on. And now we are doing completely different.
Yeah, it's a well-known...
You cannot even imagine.
Exactly. It's a well-known fact that people are underestimating the short-term or they're underestimating the long-term changes and overestimating the short-term changes. So we think that we go to the Mars next year, which we probably would not, but world, because of the space technology, will look totally different than we can imagine now in 30 years.
Yeah. Well, that's a very nice, comforting way to close it after we went a bit up and down. So, well, thanks a lot for the discussion.
Thank you for having me.
It was really good. We went really around, and I hope this is interesting, actually, because when you speak with an expert, you get different views. So maybe in the future we can meet again and continue the discussion. Never know.
Glad to come.
All right, thanks a lot.
And that was the discussion. Thanks to listening this far. And before we close, I want to, as always, tell about our Twitter account at @STG_podcast. You can come there, follow us to get a new episode. And if you want to communicate with us, give us advice or topics that you are interested in and we could cover in the podcast if we find some expert or if we have some knowledge on the topic ourselves. And checking the statistics, I'm actually seeing that probably around 30-40% of the listeners, they use Apple Podcast. And I discovered that if people would give A good review to the podcast is actually helps a lot to distribute the podcast and to surface it more into searches, and it's been shown to people more. So if you enjoy this content, if you enjoy this podcast and the other episodes, maybe consider give us a review in either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and of course share the episode around on Twitter or whatever social network you like more. And see you next time. Bye bye.